All right, it's time for us to begin tonight. I'm glad you're here. We're in John chapter 4. We're studying about Jesus, and he is in the nearest town anyway, is the city of what? Sychar. And he has met a woman, a Samaritan woman, and I'm not going to tease Mick too much. There are a lot of fascinating things about this chapter, aren't there?
Yes, there are.
What are some of the fascinating things about this chapter?
Maybe the questions that she had asked, Jesus' response to.
Well, and the questions that she asked, because what's fascinating about this whole encounter?
Oh, she's a Samaritan.
A Samaritan woman, and he's a Jewish man. And he's asking her for water. And we've talked about how that again, the master teacher is taking an ordinary, normal conversation of everyday life, a normal need, a normal situation, and he's turning something physical into something spiritual. And again, great example for all of us. So we talked about so far in John chapter 4 that he's asked her for a drink. At verse 10, he tells her basically, if you knew what? Two things.
He who it was.
And?
The gift of God.
If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you. There's two. If you knew those two things, our conversation is going to go in a completely different direction. But she doesn't know that. And he will get her there. But we're going to begin down around verse 15 in our study tonight. Again, having identified that she talked to him still in fleshly terms about you don't have anything to get the water out of the well, when he had talked to her about living water. And then we talked last week about the fact that what she is focused on is about literal water. And he says, what you're seeking for, you're going to keep seeking for the rest of your life because it doesn't last. But what I have to offer you will last forever. And she now then wants that type of water. She wants to know what that is. All right, John chapter 4, so let's, as we ought to do, let's read the text, and let's read John chapter, let's begin in verse 13, John chapter 4 and verse 13, and go all the way down through 26. John 4, 13 through 26. Volunteers, Randy?
John 4, 13 through 26. Jesus answered and said to her, everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again. Whoever drinks of the water that I will give him shall never thirst, but the water that I will give him will become in him a well of water springing up to eternal life. The woman said to him, sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty nor come all the way here to draw. He said to her, go, call your husband and come here. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you have correctly said I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you have now is not your husband. This you have said truly. The woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and you people say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When that one comes, he will declare all things to us. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he.
All right. So thank you, Randy. So let's back up just a little bit, maybe just a verse or two to, again, set our context. Jesus introduces this idea of living water. The woman's response, again, still with a fleshly mindset, she's still thinking physically. She wants the water that Jesus has to offer. She wants this living water, but why does she want it? What's the two reasons that she says, give me this water, because there's a couple of things I don't want to have to do anymore. I don't want to be thirsty.
I don't want to have to come and bring my water.
I don't want to have to drag my bucket over here to the well every day. So again, she didn't want to have to be physically thirsty anymore. And again, I think about John chapter 6. Remember, after Jesus again had fed the 5,000, they came seeking him, and he tells them, "You're not seeking me because you saw the signs, but because you ate the loaves and you're hungry again." And in verse 34, after talking about himself as the bread of life, their response was, "Lord, always give us this bread." I mean, he had been talking about the manna from heaven, that it wasn't Moses who gave the manna, it was God. And they're like, "Yeah, can you always do that for us? Can you always feed us? Can you always provide our physical needs? That'd be really great. Wouldn't that be pretty cool to have somebody make you breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day of your life? Just have it there right there for you." But again, I don't want to be physically thirsty anymore. I don't want to have to come to this well. And we have to ask ourselves, what do we want Jesus to do for us? And again, does Jesus ever ask that question to anybody during his ministry? What do you want me to do for you? Remember, there's two different times, one in the same chapter. In Mark chapter 10, two different times Jesus asked the question, "What do you want me to do for you?" The first time, you remember who he says that to? Mark chapter 10, verse 36. Somebody want to read that? Mark 10, beginning in verse 36. James and John. It's and again, what's the context here? Why did he say that to James and John? Yeah, they're like, "We want something from you, Jesus." And his response is, "Well, what do you want me to do for you?" And in that particular case here in Mark chapter 2, what is it that they wanted from Jesus? To put it into a single word, they wanted
power.
Yeah. They wanted power. They wanted authority. What do you want Jesus to do for you? Well, the apostles at that point in time said, "Yeah, we want power." Now, later on in verse 51, who is Jesus asking that question to? What do you want me to do for you? Yes, right. And they were crying out to Jesus, "What? Right. What do you want me to do for you?" And they wanted their sight. And so, and we might say, "Well, that's a little bit more of a noble request than can we have power." But really, when it comes to Jesus, and especially in the context of John chapter 4, even beyond physical sight, we can understand that, right? But is there something Jesus has to offer even more than our physical eyesight? And that's what he's talking about, this living water that will spring up within you. There's something even more than physical sight or power or food. And again, the question is, what are we looking for the Lord to do for us? She was like, I just don't want to be thirsty anymore, and I don't have to come to this well all the time. And Jesus is like, there's a lot more that I have to offer you than just an ease in this life. So then we go on, going back to John chapter 4. And he says in verse 16, okay, so she's like, does he get it yet? She's like, is she? No, she's not there, is she? No, and so he doesn't exactly explain it to her, but in fact he takes the conversation in a new direction. There's a couple of things that when we talk about this, again, go back to that question. Jesus said, "If you knew who I am, or if you knew who it is who says to you," she doesn't know him yet. It's time for him to introduce himself. And really beginning then in verses 16 through 19, I like to call this is Jesus' introduction. And how is it that Jesus begins his introduction of himself to this woman? He begins with a question and or a request. And what does he request of her? "Go get your husband." And he knows the answer to that question. "Go get your husband." And her response is, "I don't currently have a husband, Although, was she living with someone? Yes. And what else does she go ahead and declare? She says, I have no husband. And Jesus told her, you got that right. And in fact, you don't have a husband. What in fact does he tell her about her life? You've had five of them, and you're with somebody now that's not your husband. Mickey?
You're going there, I'm sure. Keep my mouth shut. In order for Jesus to teach this woman that he's the Savior, he's got to help her understand that she's lost. And he's telling her just that. You're lost. You've had five husbands, and right now you're living in sin.
Yep.
Your life is characterized in sin.
Well, this introduction is twofold. He needs her to know who he is. She needs to know who she is. Okay? And she may not understand, as a lot of people don't, that she's a sinner and she's lost. And she doesn't know who he is. And she doesn't yet understand who she herself is, in God's sight.
I have a little bit of confusion here. We're all assuming that Jesus is calling her out on her sin at this point. And as you just said, we have no indication that she hears this and thinks that she's doing anything wrong. Even in the Jewish religion, you were allowed to divorce people. You were allowed to divorce multiple times. And so having had five husbands and having now lived with somebody else, maybe she doesn't know that she's doing anything wrong. And from this context, we don't see Jesus ever telling her, this is wrong, what you're doing is wrong. So I don't know that we can come away from this with anything other than our perspective of she's doing wrong. She, from this context, doesn't look like she knows that. She goes to tell the other Samaritans, okay, and she says, this guy told me everything I ever did. But if she's feeling ashamed of what he's told her, is she going to go do that? This guy told me everything I ever did wrong in my life. Go talk to him. That's not a rousing recommendation.
Okay, I understand your point, but I would suggest that she's uncomfortable about what Jesus has declared to her, because when he has covered this, she kind of changes the subject a little bit, doesn't she? I mean, she goes from, again, her marital situation and so forth to, okay, let's talk about where we worship and where you worship and what's right. Can I establish that all five marriages were scriptural or unscriptural, were they adultery or not? No. But go ahead.
You can establish that what she's doing present.
Well, her present situation is not right. In terms of living with someone who's not her husband. So no, I don't know that all five marriages were all right or all wrong. But again, you're right. He did point out what your living situation now is not right. And again, just by her reaction, she's not interested in necessarily pursuing this any further. Bruce, and then Tommy, and then back to Chris.
You know, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. But when he begins the conversation speaking about living water, he knows that he really doesn't have her attention yet. But now that he's beginning to tell her about her life, now he has her attention.
Well, right. And again, does someone who has never committed sin need living water? No, Jesus didn't need this living water because life was in himself. Tommy, then Chris.
I do think it's interesting, though, as soon as she thinks he's a prophet, she goes and does some things that, when I go talk to people about religion, that people do as well. We still do this today. It's, okay, so let's talk about religion. Let's talk about some touchy subjects. You think this, I think this. You know, let's get into a theological debate about some abstract thought. And so she starts talking about where we're worshiping, and it's almost like, you know, well, what if a guy never meets another person on the face of the earth, and he never hears about Jesus, and he's going to go to heaven because he's on his deathbed? know, to me it's kind of that same type of situation where now that he's a prophet, because he's clearly got some ability from God, or he wouldn't know all this about me.
Right.
So now let's ask a couple questions I've always been interested in finding out about.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Chris? All right, so again, like I said, there's two things that I think Jesus needed to accomplish. She still needs to know who he is. She still needs to know why she needs some living water. The type of living water Jesus is actually talking about, not what she thinks in terms of just a perpetual H2O supply. So again, Jesus speaks of her marital situation, and so doing, again, speaks of things that only someone who is a prophet, who is of God, would know. Nobody else would know these things. Any other human being, somebody, this Jewish man, wouldn't know these things about me. He wouldn't know that I've been married 5 times and that I'm living with someone who's not a husband right now. And again, I'll just phrase it this way. Again, he needs to point out, and whether or not her divorces were legitimate or not, again, right now she's not living in a right relationship. She is in sin, and as such, again, he needs to create in her the need for living water and not temporal water. Chris?
You mentioned divorce. That was my initial thought, that it was divorce, and we know from other scripture that authorized by the law or not, Jesus is not a fan of divorce. But then I thought, well, her previous husband is going to die.
Okay.
That was my comment, and then canceled it, and then you mentioned it anyway.
I went there again. Huh? All right. Yeah. They could have died. Again, they could have been scriptural divorces. We don't know, but where she's at now, let's again camp there. Where she's at now, spiritually, is she where she needs to be? Jenny?
Final thought, and then I'll stop. I see in this passage that he points out to us her sinful condition. I don't see in this passage anywhere at all where he points out to her sinful condition. We know from our perspective that this is wrong. But given just the conversation that we see here, there's no indication except for maybe tone that maybe made her change the subject, which there could be other reasons why she changed the subject. There's no indication here that he says the person you're living with now is not your husband and that's wrong.
Are there times in life when somebody points out to something that we know is wrong and that all they have to do is point it out to us? And we just...
If we're starting with the same baseline, yes.
Well...
But there's no indication she's starting with the same
baseline.
There's
no indication that she doesn't.
She, in her conversation with him, essentially equates the Samaritans with the Jews. In other words, she says that Jacob is our father. She indicates that she is, by the way that she speaks, that she's knowledgeable of the law of the Jews. They've been living in the area near the Jews for so many years, and they're quite familiar with what they consider themselves to be as part of the tribes of the chosen people of God. She knows good and well that living with a man outside of marriage is adulterous.
Well, and the other thing we'll point out in terms of, if we talk about this with Nicodemus, it's true with this woman. Do you know her heart?
He does, yeah.
Jesus does. In terms of what she even knows about herself? I mean, God knows us even better than we know ourselves. So, yeah, we'll talk more, especially as we come to verse 25, in terms of the fact that she had enough knowledge of the old law to look for what? Or look for who?
Look for the Messiah.
Messiah, yeah. So, but let's again focus on this again. Jesus, again, she doesn't know who he is. she doesn't have any reason to understand the need for this living water, and he needs to get her to understand both of those points. You need to understand who I am, and I'm going to tell you the things that I should know about you, and she picks up on that. And again, he needs to create in her the need for the living water. It addresses the need that this living water was designed for. This living water is designed for people who realize what about themselves? That we're sinners. Do I have it up there yet? No. have it up there, Luke chapter 5, verse 8. What's going on in Luke chapter 5 in those first few verses? We have the fishermen, Peter and John. And Jesus told them to do what? And Peter said, at thy bidding or at thy word, because you said so, I'll do it. And they cast their nets on the other side. They got the great haul of fish. They brought it in. And what did Peter then realize that had it happened? A miracle. And when he realized it was a miracle, and that this was Jesus, and that only God can perform miracles, in verse 8, what did Peter suddenly, in the presence of Jesus, realize about himself?
I'm a sinner in the presence of God.
Depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. Again, at that point in time, Peter recognized, Lord, you're the Son of God, and I'm a sinful man, that I can't be in your presence. That's creating that need for that living water. I'm not right with you. I'm a sinner. Remember what Isaiah said in Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 8? You know, when he saw the throne room of God and saw the glory of God, and Isaiah's reaction was what? Woe is me, for I'm undone. If I remember right, that Hebrew word means I'm ruined spiritually. Chris? All right. And in John chapter 8, again, just talking about those who would realize the need for the living water, John chapter 8, 1 through 11, what do we encounter, what do we read about in that context? The woman who was caught in adultery. And again, Jesus told the audience, whoever's without sin, cast for stone. They all left. What did Jesus have to say to this woman? What did Jesus have to say to the woman?
He didn't say, go your way, you don't have any problems.
That's right. Go your way and sin
no more.
You're a sinner, and you need to stop sinning. Again, he wanted her to understand her need for living water. You need to stop sinning. So, again, we need to both in ourselves and those we come in contact with, are the vast majority of the people we work with, our neighbors and the folks we drive around town and see, do they have any idea of what they need in terms of this living water? Any clue that... No point is that sometimes before we can help somebody, we have to first get them to realize that they're sinners, that they're lost, and that they have a need. And again, the vast majority of people in the world today do realize the spiritual need that they have. So, again, in terms of Jesus introducing himself, having met someone who told her all the things that I have done, she says that twice in verse 29 and 39, she now concludes that Jesus is a what? A prophet. And worthy of the title, sir, or if you look in your footnotes, for the word sir, it also means, again, it's from the Greek word kurios, where the vast majority, and it's a Greek word used a lot, most often translated Lord. It simply means a title of honor, expressive of respect and reverence, with which servants salute their master. Jesus said, do you know who's talking to you? And now at this point in time, she says that, sir, I perceive you're a prophet. And again, by using the word sir, the word for Lord, and exactly how full her knowledge is, but she's using a term for him that now indicates a degree of respect and reverence as a servant. Jenny?
Is that the same Greek word that's in verse 11 and verse 15?
I'll let Richard look that up real quick.
Or John 4.
John 4, 11. And James also
say, sir. Yeah, it looks like it is. You said verse 11 and what?
11,
15,
and 19.
Yes, they're all the same word. True, yeah, it is the same word. Okay. So again, what she now changes then is she's using a title respect before, but now she's recognizing him as a prophet, someone from God. And again, a title of honor and respect for him. So the woman now, again, having been told all the facts about her life, you've had five husbands, you're not living with someone who's your husband now. Again, it is interesting at the very least that the topics, at least you can say the topic of the conversation changes. Again, if someone had come to you and said, I know things about you that aren't right, and you know that I shouldn't know that, would you be comfortable with the conversation continuing in that direction, Shannon?
Probably not.
I've already introduced, I know things about your life that aren't right. And you might be interested maybe in turning the conversation in another direction.
Change the subject.
If you know that, you might know what other things, right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes, Tommy, I think you addressed this point, when we're in discussions with people today, do sometimes people, instead of dealing with the matter at hand, do people sometimes want to bring up ancillary arguments that, you know, let's not talk about this. Let's talk about this debate I heard. Let's talk about this controversy, you know, that's really not at the heart of the matter. But let's talk about that instead. And indeed, when she then says in verse 20, our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and you people say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Is that a legitimate controversy for the people at that time? Yeah? Is that at the heart of what really is being discussed right now, though? I mean, is she staying on point? No. And really, the discussion had been a very personal one, hadn't it? I mean, this is getting personal. We start talking about what you've done in your life and what you're living in now. It's gone from a very personal discussion now to when you talk about whether we worship at this mountain or in Jerusalem, it's now no longer a personal discussion, is it? It's kind of more of a corporate discussion. Again, this is a Samaritans versus a Jews discussion. I'm taking myself out of the picture. This is now a question or discussion about two groups of people that go back how long? What, 1,200 years? No, I'm sorry, not that long. The Samaritans would go back about 1,000 years. Anyway, a long time. Bruce, you have to hear it?
You know, I mean, this is so so fruitful. Because, you know, when you talk to people, and I mean, here now, it's almost like a third conversation. And normally when you talk to people who are religious today, instead of them wanting to go to scripture, they tell you things like, well, God talked to me yesterday. We're talking today. Trying to get a conversation.
Well, and again, conversations often go in a different direction. And sometimes you'll study with someone that they'll want to, well, let's talk about instrumental music, okay? And you go down that road. And we want to talk about these kind of other, you know, aspects. And ultimately, when you study, if someone who's not a member of the church wants to go down the road of, let's talk about instrumental music, what's really at the heart of that issue? Is it really about instrumental music? It all comes down to authority. And again, you can chase after the rabbits of this or that, but really what it comes down to absolutely is a matter of authority, of getting to the heart of the issue.
Lisa? She's already done this. When he very first asked her for water, she went with the whole dodge of, why are you talking to me? You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. And then, do you have something to draw with? And then when he says about the water, she's like, are you better than our father Jacob? I mean, she's throwing it at him. She's done that already twice. And then, so she's reverting back to that defense mechanism at this point. So she's definitely uncomfortable with something.
I'm uncomfortable about something. Let's talk about something else. Absolutely. Okay.
Well, we should probably remember that she met Jesus maybe 2 minutes ago, and they've already gone on to really personal ground here. I'm not comfortable talking to somebody I just met 2 minutes ago about my personal life.
And I've already told you I know a lot about it, right?
Yeah, it makes complete sense to me to change the subject to something that everybody probably has an opinion on. Let's get back onto something that I know is an issue and you know is an issue, and let's talk about that instead of me.
Me, yes. That's what I said. I mean, once a prophet came to me and said, Chris, I want to start itemizing the sin in your life. Can we talk about something else? No, did not have that, enjoy that as a topic of conversation. But again, she does bring up again something that well known. This is not a new issue. Something a lot of people had questions about. Again, can we use the phrase a long standing source of division? I mean, this is the age old question, and it goes back to how far does this question go back? And again, speaking of whether or not to go back and read these passages, but when you go back to Deuteronomy 27, Deuteronomy 11, Joshua chapter 8, again, just at least tell me, what period of time is this covering? Joshua chapter 8, Deuteronomy, is
before they even enter the land.
It's right when they come into the land of Canaan, and basically, those passages, can we summarize those passages real quick? What did he say when they first came into the promised land? They came to a couple of mountains, didn't they? And God, through Joshua, pronounced both blessings and curses. And he associated two mountains with these blessings and these curses. And what were those two mountains?
Gerizim
and the other one, yes. Otherwise in Hebrew known as Ebal. And eventually, again, these blessings were known to be associated with Mount Gerizim. And in fact, a place of worship was established there. But ultimately, where did God decide that, again, his name would dwell in terms of the place of worship? In Jerusalem. And that's where God decided that his temple would be built. So you can go back and study again the history and the passages in Deuteronomy and Joshua and so forth. But did Jesus go there in terms of, well, let's go back and study these scriptures? No.
I was just going to mention while you're mentioning that I looked this up last week, and if I remember correctly, Sychar was previously known as Shechem, and that was previously the capital of Israel, way back when.
Right, and in fact, there was a temple of worship there until, I didn't put this in here, John Hyrcanus, in what, about 129 BC, came and I believe destroyed that place of worship about 120, 130 years before Christ came. But the Samaritans still looked at that mountain as, that's our place. And interestingly enough, where all the Jews would point to, obviously in Jerusalem, still existed at this time, but wouldn't exist for long. And so about 200 years from the time that John Hyrcanus destroyed the temple in Shechem to the time that Rome destroyed the temple in Jerusalem, both these places of worship were gone. So, again, the question is that she's asking, again, our fathers worship here. And again, where are they standing right now?
Essentially Mount Gerizim.
They're within a couple of miles, probably, of this mountain. Our fathers worshipped, and she probably, when she said in this mountain, she could point to it. So it's right there. Our fathers worshipped here. And she said, you say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Okay, here's the age-old question. We're looking at the mountain that we say, but... So when we think about that, again, we've answered this question already. Again, I duplicated that point there in the slide. Our fathers worshiped, what mountain was that? We talked about that's Mount Gerizim. You men say that Jerusalem is a place we ought to worship. Again, Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 5 and 11. That's where God says, I will decide, basically, this is loose paraphrase, I will decide where my house will be built. I will decide where I will reside in terms of being among you. And then we see in 1 Kings chapter 8 is where the decision, that's when the Ark of the Covenant actually comes from where? Where did the Ark of the Covenant come from to Jerusalem? The house of David, which was Bethlehem, right? So there, again, just tying out those passages in terms of where you say that Jerusalem is a place where you ought to worship. Now, we get to the point where we're saying, again, what her motives were, whether she was like the Pharisees and Sadducees trying to entrap Jesus, I don't know if that was her motive to try and trap him or simply trying to bring up another topic. But regardless, how does Jesus answer? Does he, like I said, well, let's go back and study the Old Testament scriptures about this, and let's figure out historically where we ought to worship. Is that where he goes? No, he doesn't go to the point of saying, well, let's figure out who's right, and rather than deal with well over 1,000 years of history, Jesus, instead of saying, let's go back to the beginning, says, an hour is coming. And then later on in verse 23, he says what? And now is. When that basically, in my words, when that question won't matter. Whether we worship in Jerusalem or whether we worship on this mountain, an hour is coming and now is, when that doesn't matter.
So they're going from discussing old, the Old Testament, now is that we're talking the new covenant.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. He is talking about, again, what was his subject to with him and Nicodemus in John chapter 3? The overall subject was the kingdom. The kingdom. And he's talking now about worship in the kingdom. It's not going to be here or there. It's not going to be a place. And I'm not going to bother going back and trying to define who was right and who was wrong. Now, the bottom line is that was there, under the old law, a right place to worship? Yeah. I mean, there was an answer to that question. But Jesus said, we're not going to bother with that now. I'm pointing you to the kingdom. I'm pointing you to when the kingdom comes and how worship is going to take place. Again, he answers basically, it's neither here nor there. You ask about where are we going to worship, is it this mountain or Jerusalem? And he's like, well, neither. That in the kingdom, an hour is coming when it's not going to matter this place or that place. Randy?
I just thought it was interesting in verse 20, she says, our fathers worship this mountain. And you, she's contrasting.
Yeah.
My people, your people.
Does he bite on that either?
Yeah, because in verse 22 he says, you worship that which you don't know. If you're worshiping in ignorance, you're worshiping in vain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't go and correct her about, well,
he doesn't correct her.
He's really not your father. He does, you're right.
He points out.
He's
You want to talk about us and them?
Well, it's interesting. I think ultimately in Jesus' answer, he addresses the worship of the Samaritans and the Jews when he finally says, in my kingdom, how true worship is going to happen. I think he addresses both of that. Somebody else has been in the commission?
I think there's an objective here that we sure don't want to miss. I think you pointed that out. We'll come back to it. Jesus don't play ball with this woman. She's entered several controversial subjects, as if it were to try to create fuss. Jesus doesn't cooperate with her and engage in the conversations she wants to engage in. He doesn't debate the matter with her. He's establishing points, but he don't argue with her. And the objective is to teach this woman about salvation, to teach her about worship.
And who I am.
And who I am. That's the best truth. And that's the objective. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that in our efforts to study.
We chase the rabbits, right?
We're successful because we chase too many rabbits.
Yeah.
We lose sight of the objective. What is it we want to communicate? We want to just fuss and have a debate on some of these integral points? Or do we want to get across or communicate the information this person must know in order to be saved?
Right, right. And again, I don't know, like I said, if her attitude was that of the Pharisees and Sadducees, where she's trying to trap him or whatever. But again, Jesus has an objective here. That I want you to know who I am, and I want you to know what I have to offer. And again, I'm not going to get distracted from that. And again, that is so true. We can get lost in ultimately, worship is important. We need to answer that. But again, trying to go back and deal with that now, he's got, again, more important matters of assuring who he is and, again, what she needs to know and what she needs to do. So, again, just real quick, just putting out on the map, there somewhere near Sychar. And again, I'm pointing to the name, not to the dot is about where the town is. But again, the well is not too far from there. So you can see, obviously, that if they're somewhere near that well, that is not a long distance away. And here we have, again, this is Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal today. And so I don't know, it looks like you might be a mile or two away at this point in time. Those mountains would have been, you know, perhaps that close. And they might have been, and I believe Mount Gerizim is on the left and Mount Ebal on the right there. So again, that would be the mountain that she would be pointing at, saying, is that the place? And somewhere up there would have been that former temple that was a place of worship in times past. So, Randy, I think you're the one who mentioned this. Now, again, this is like the ping pong match. Again, it kind of goes back and forth, right, as most discussions do. So Jesus responds to the woman's question about where to worship. Okay, you worship in Jerusalem, we worship on the mountain. Which one's right? His response is? Okay, first of all, he makes the point that Randy established. First of all, he says that you worship that which you do not know. You worship that which you do not know, in verse 22. Again, what did that mean? What was he trying to say?
You don't know.
Your worship consisted of what? What does Samaritan worship consist of?
Man-made
ideas and idols. It was just made up, wasn't it? Of course, I mean, if it's not from God, it's just made up. It's just a man-made religion. You worship that which you do not know. James?
When you look at it, 2 Kings 17, some of those false gods are named in that passage. So it says they fear God in that passage, but they also worship their man-made gods. So their concept of God and the importance of Jehovah is just not understood. From the very beginning.
Exactly. You know, it was just, yeah. From the, if you start drawing a line
And from the beginning, it's off. It's going to, you know, no matter how straight the line, once you start, when you're off, it's going to remain off. And again, they didn't start right. In verse 34 of 2 Kings 17, and we pointed out that this is where it talks about how, the Assyrians took the Israelites away. The lions started eating up all the Assyrians who were there, and they're like, oh, maybe we should bring back some of the priests, you know, to help us understand the God of this land. And they really didn't know. I mean, how long had it been since the northern 10 tribes had worshipped God according to the law? Right. So the Assyrians took away in about 730, something like that, and Jeroboam took over in about 920. So it may have been a couple hundred years, approximately, since they had ever worshipped God. And even from the time that Jeroboam started, you know, they're talking about Mount Gerizim, but, you know, it was Jeroboam who, as he devised in his own heart, had created two places of worship so they would not go to Jerusalem, which were what two cities? Dan and Bethel. So, and then notice verse 34 of 2 Kings 17 in this whole context where it says, to this day, they do according to the earlier customs. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinance or the law or the commandments which the Lord commanded the sons of who? Anybody have that open? Verse 34? The sons of Jacob. Again, what was it that the woman said?
Our father Jacob.
Yeah. And here in 2 Kings 17, 34, again, you're not doing what Jacob, you know, had said to do. It's interesting that it says there, you get to this day, that they haven't been worshiping anything according to what God's law was. So you worship that which you do not know. Again, he says, we worship that which we know, for salvation is from the Jews. And we're out of time, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll study a little bit more about that in terms of we worship that which we know. And then we'll talk a little bit more about this answer of that true worshipers will worship in spirit and in truth. Again, the two elements that in worship in the kingdom that, again, it was now about to come, these were the elements that were important to God. So, thank you.